afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the consequences of change and how today's choices impact tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. On November 19th, the City of San Luis Obispo released the public review draft of the active transportation plan. Over the past 2 years, staff have been engaging with the community in developing the plan that serves as a successor to the 2013 bicycle transportation plan. The city is inviting the community to provide input on the draft active transportation plan during the current public review period, which is going to be ending on December 31st, 2020. My guests for today's show will be providing more detailed information about the transportation plan, what it involves, who it affects, how it will impact the city of SLO, and how it will serve the community at large. I'm joined today by Adam Fukushima, Active Transportation Manager, and Chris Reed, Sustainability Manager for the City of San Luis Obispo. Our show today has been pre-recorded. However, you can submit your questions or comments to voices@kcbx.org, and we'll forward them directly to Adam at the City of San Luis Obispo so he can answer them directly to you. And welcome both Adam and Chris. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
I went to the website and looked at that, and there's a lot of information in that plan, but I think there's a lot of questions that I have today. So thank you for being here to answer some of those for me. That's great.
Absolutely, our pleasure.
So first, what is an active transportation plan? What's the purpose of that?
Yeah, so the active transportation plan is really a blueprint for increasing bicycling and walking in the city and making those modes more comfortable for people, so they feel like transferring some of their vehicular trips to bicycling and walking trips. We are also adding a new element too. You know, we've done a lot of bicycle planning in the city. We have a long history and tradition of it, but we're also adding pedestrians to the mix. So that's also a very exciting part of the plan. This is our first sort of formal foray into that. We've done, you know, obviously we've done a lot of pedestrian work, but this is our first plan that kind of puts it all in one comprehensive place. So we're really excited about doing that.
Why are you doing this now? I mean, we've got so much stuff going on. Why now for the active transportation plan?
That's a great question. There's a number of good reasons. One is we have a lot of new sort of design tools that the state has let us use now to make these modes better. So there's things like protected bike lanes that your listeners may have heard of. It's something that kind of started in Europe. It provides sort of a bike lane, but more in the travel way of a major street, but provides a separation and protection that a lot of people are asking for. They say, you know, they really want to, you know, they like the facilities we have, but they really feel like, you know, they still feel
exposed
yeah, to all the traffic. And so when we heard that the state is allowing us to use that, we said, oh, we got to update our plan so that we could look at the areas that we could, you know, put down some of these protected bike lanes, as well as other things for pedestrians too. There's a new thing called a protected intersection, which kind of does the same thing but for an intersection, and kind of minimizes the exposure that pedestrians have walking through an intersection as well too. So I know it's kind of hard to describe this on a radio show, but if you go to the plan, if you go to slowbikewalk.org and look at it, you can see some illustrative photos of it. Another major reason for updating this is we now have a climate action plan, and we have Chris here. He's the project manager for that. But basically, it sets a goal of being climate neutral by 2035. And a big part of that is getting more, you know, bicycle and pedestrian trips, because we know that greenhouse gases are the largest contributor I mean, I'm sorry, transport, we know that transportation is the largest contributor to greenhouse gases. And so the active transportation plan is a key component of that.
We really saw that.
Yeah, if I
with
can.
The, yeah, Chris, go ahead, please.
Yeah, if I can just add in there, you know, we do these large participatory budgeting processes every 2 years. And for a long time, most notably from my view, 2017 through 2019, you know, the community really prioritized climate action and active transportation. And then again, in 2019 to 21, the community, again, you know, thousands of people participated in surveys or came out to our workshops and identified climate action and active transportation as just a major community priority. And then through each of our respective projects, whether through the climate plan or the active transportation plan, you know, hosting just dozens and dozens of events, talking to thousands of folks, it's clear that, you know, the time is now to make these investments to improve our community and to address our greenhouse gas emissions.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. Can you talk a little bit about how this plan actually engaged the community? And was it something that is a planner's plan or is it a community plan?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. We did a lot of outreach over the last 2 years. One thing that was really important to us was, you know, we didn't want to expect people to just come to traditional town hall meetings and meet that way, because we know that people live busy lives. You know, they can't always come to a night meeting. They may be busy with, you know, putting the kids to bed, you know, brushing their teeth, all that kind of stuff. So we want to make sure that we engaged everybody. And what we did was we tried to come up with ways to engage that were a little bit untraditional. So we met with, you know, we wanted to go out to the community. So we did workshops in different parts of the city, basically about six different parts of them, every quadrant, basically, on weekends. And we met in coffee houses and at grocery stores. And we just asked people, what are the major barriers to you? And what are the things that would help you bicycle and walk more often? And so that was a key component. Also had some online things as well, too, because we know that some people want to do it on their own. We had some really fun interactive mapping exercises. We could go and click on a map and say, I would like to have a crosswalk here, and that you could sort of click on it and put your comments in there. But I think that was probably the most fun part of this planning exercise, just seeing all the different people come and tell us what their different needs are. You know, SLO actually has a lot of diverse voices, and it's good to hear what people think. You know, one thing we know, what we've heard, is that at least for the bicycling side, there isn't just one kind of bicyclist. You know, I think for many people, they think of the bicyclist, they look at, you know, the type that sort of, you know, wears the same uniform, goes on a long ride,
right,
you know, on a 10-speed bike. But we know that there are many different kinds of people who ride bikes, especially moms who want to ride their kids to school, and also people who want to go buy groceries and take their bike on, you know, there's things like cargo bikes now and electric bikes. And so
right,
we heard a lot of input from people like them.
Well, and three-wheeler bikes, you know, bikes that have the stability of riders that can't ride a two-wheel.
Exactly. So, and even those who can't or don't want to ride a bike and would rather, you know, talk about the pedestrian things that make things easier to just walk to the corner grocery store and just grab a carton of milk, and some of the barriers they face as well, too.
Can you talk a little bit?
I think the one other thing.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Yeah,
that's okay,
I think
Chris.
The one other thing there, too, you know, is that maybe people want to be able to take the bus throughout the community. And in some ways, the pedestrian system or the bicycle system can serve as an extension of transit. It can allow folks to get to bus stops and into their destination easier as well. So, you know, it's not just the bike, it's not just the bus. It really is about, or sorry, not just bike, it's not just walking. It really is about mobility and access throughout the community.
Was that factored in, how many bicycles can be accommodated by buses for extended travel?
Yeah, that's a good question. So our bus, I guess, bike racks on the buses, they can accommodate, I think, up to six at a time, which is great. But, you know, there is a limit. And so one thing we looked at as well was the connections to transit. So, are there routes that can help you get to a bus stop, where you could use your bike for one part of your trip and then maybe take the bus for the other part, or
Right.
walk for a certain part of it, get off the bus and then walk the rest. Those kind of things we looked at as well too.
Yeah. And in European countries or countries that do a lot of combined transportation, you have areas where there are safe parking for bicycles that they're less likely to be stolen, and people can lock them up safely that are part of the transit system. Is that part of this plan?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're also looking at what we could do to increase the parking at transit stops, especially the downtown transit center. We see a lot of opportunity for being able to do that, provide more secure parking, opportunities for even covered parking so that when it's raining, your bike doesn't get all wet. Also other amenities, just looking at the kind of maps we have, we're looking at the transit schedules, and how you interact and going from one mode of transportation to the next.
Can you talk about the area that is covered by this plan? What approximate area is included in this?
So this is a citywide plan, is what it is. So it's about trying to help those crosstown trips by walking or bicycling. We heard from a lot of people in our public outreach that, for instance, for walking, just getting across major arterial streets was a barrier. If you live, let's say, near Pacheco or Bishop Peak Elementary School, and you want to get across Foothill Boulevard to shopping, that just crossing Foothill Boulevard with its high speed and high volume traffic was difficult. And so, we've done things like more signals on Foothill, and we have plans for more. But there are other parts of town that kind of have the same challenges. For instance, getting to parks, like Meadow Park, getting across South Street. So basically, getting from neighborhoods to across these busy arterial streets and making it easier for people to get across, and just basically connecting our community.
So this includes both pedestrian and cycling. Was there any consideration of whether or not it would be expansive into other kinds of transportation besides those two?
Yeah, so we even looked at, there are other modes we're seeing as well too, especially with Cal Poly students. We're seeing them using different devices. Scooters is one thing we're seeing a lot of. Skateboards, even electric skateboards. There's even these new devices called One Wheel you may have seen people are balancing on. And those are all trips that people are replacing a car trip and saving money by doing it, and helping our climate action goals. So we want to make sure that that's factored into it, and making sure that we're looking, we're not just looking at bikes and walking.
Fantastic. And I'm going to take a real quick break here. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener supported radio station. The voices with me are Adam Fukushima, Active Transportation Manager, and Chris Reed, Sustainability Manager for the City of San Luis Obispo. And we are talking about the new active transportation plan that's in draft form, and they're still asking for community input for the City of San Luis Obispo. And you can do that on the website of the draft plan. And Adam, that website again?
www.slowbikewalk.org.
Okay, fantastic. Our show today has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions or comments, you're invited to submit them directly to voices@kcbx.org. We'll forward them to Adam at the City of San Luis Obispo, and he can answer them directly for you. And I'm curious about how this is being paid for. Where's the funding come from
Yeah,
for
that
implementation?
absolutely. That's a great question. So one reason why we're doing the plan is because we will be going up for a lot of state and federal grants, and having a plan like this and showing that there's buy-in from the community and that there's been some prioritization about which ones, you know, which projects to start first is really important to grantors. They want to know that there's, you know, there's buy-in from the community. And so that's a huge component of this. Another big part of paying for the plan is, and this is something that's kind of unique to San Luis Obispo, is development. So when a development comes to the city, especially these larger, you know, housing ones like San Luis Ranch, Avila Ranch, the Rigetti Ranch developments, if there is a project that's within those areas, as a condition of development, they have to build those projects. And I would say about a good 30% of the plan will be paid for as a condition of development. So portions of the Railroad Safety Trail will be built that way. Portions of the Bob Jones Trail will be built that way in the city, as well as other bicycle and pedestrian projects as well.
When you were developing this plan, when you were getting input from the city, were you asking people to come in? Were there surveys that you were sending out? Were you taking people out to community groups? I'm curious whether or not you were getting feedback in different languages, like in Spanish, from some of the individuals that may or may not speak English or be able to answer a survey or understand a website that's in English.
Yeah, so that's one reason why we did those pop-ups and workshops in the neighborhoods. We wanted to see people where they're at. We did get some emails that came in Spanish, and we have some people in our staff. I don't speak Spanish, unfortunately. We have some people in our staff that helped out in answering those. We also did a lot of outreach with Cal Poly, and we also got some good input from, you know, maybe some of the stakeholders don't hear about too often with bicycling and walking. That's, for instance, like Slow Rise. They are a nonprofit that looks at sexual assault. And they talked to us about how they heard a lot of input about just needing more streetlights at night for people to walk, and the safety aspect of just walking alone. And so that was really good feedback for us to hear, and where those areas are that need more street lighting. Something that sounds so basic, but yet is so important for encouraging more people to bike and walk.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that was incorporated into the plan?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. And Chris, if people are, you know, listening to this and going, well, you know, I'm not so sure that I'm going to be doing a lot more walking and I'm not a cyclist, why should I care about this? How does it impact me? How do you answer that?
Yeah, you know, actually, that's a great question. We would sometimes have, when we were working on our climate action plan, which we just adopted here last in the summer in August, you know, we'd have people sort of say, well, we have electric vehicles, we don't need bike lanes, you know, like that'll be the solution to the future. But one of the things, you know, that active transportation does is it you know, sure, it reduces greenhouse gas emissions, it allows less use of single occupancy vehicles. But, you know, like when you're sitting in traffic and you say, man, I wish there wasn't so much traffic, it's important to know that in that case, you are the traffic. And so, you know, getting people out of vehicles can reduce congestion and can make it, you know, more accessible for the people that need to have vehicles or will be in vehicles. I also think, you know, I'm really proud of our climate plan in that it does the greenhouse gas emissions reduction plan, but really, it pretty quickly became a quality of life, environmental justice, equity-focused, economic development-focused plan for the next 15 years, and really thinking about the community we want to be, and, you know, seeing how housing is interrelated with the ability to, you know, have a, you know, more higher quality of life, have more affordable accessibility to our community. But how that's tied into how our streets and public spaces are used for mobility or for community, and, you know, thinking the downstream implications that those have then on greenhouse gas emissions. So for us, a community that's more walkable and bikeable and integrated with transit and is a community that's more accessible and one that I think, whether you use those assets or not, you know, makes San Luis Obispo a better place to be.
Yeah, I'd like to just add to that too, if I could. Sure. I think there's also an argument to be made that it just also kind of lends a sense of place. When you look at a lot of the cities in the country that have a lot of bicycle and walking use, places like Davis and places like Chico State and Fort Collins and all Santa Cruz, places that really care about this and put a lot of effort into it, they kind of are special places. They're not just your normal city around the country, and a lot of people are attracted to that, a place where it has its own kind of feel and sense. And I think this kind of lends to that with this plan for San Luis Obispo.
Were there any downsides to Davis, Santa Cruz, and other places that have done this, that have been pioneers in this, that you guys took into account when you put this plan together? Things that didn't work for them that you went, okay, we're not going to go there because clearly that wasn't the best choice.
I think one of the challenges that sort of bike-friendly cities like ours is dealing with is just the cost of land. Land is getting really expensive, and some of the environmental permitting that's necessary. We totally believe that there's a good reason why there's good environmental permitting, but that also takes time and it takes a lot of money to go through. And so, in the past, for us, that's meant. We've usually put our investments in things like shared use paths, a lot of them, like the Railroad Safety Trail and Bob Jones Trail. We're finding that, for the amount of effort and money we put into it, that we really haven't been able to get as many paths as we would like. We're starting now on, luckily, and I'm very happy to report this, starting a new section of the Railroad Safety Trail by between Phillips and Pepper Street, which is just near Cal Poly, along California Boulevard, just south of the US 101 overcrossing, which is going to be a great connection. But it's taken over 10 years to get the permitting for Union Pacific to go over the railroad and get the land and just a lot of money. And so we're hearing from the community that if there's a way we can move faster and do the improvements on the areas of the city that the city already owns and not have to go buy the land, and not need a lot of the environmental permitting that, goes with crossing creeks or having a bike trail along a creek, that could get us to our goals a lot faster. And so that's one thing we heard loud and clear in the community engagement is, we love this stuff, but we don't have to wait. We don't want to have to wait so long to enjoy it. So we'll be looking at the improvements we can do more quickly and more affordably on the streets we already have.
When you were getting input into this plan, did you keep track of kind of the average age of people that were giving you input?
So one thing we did was we did a statistically valid survey just to make sure that we had a broad spectrum of the community. And so that was one key part of the plan. And in the plan, when you look at a lot of statistics we got from the community engagement, that was all from that engagement, just to make sure that we're really representing
The
the
community
folks,
at
the
large.
community. Yeah, because there are a lot of folks in town that are really engaged with bicycling and walking. And we wanted to make sure that we didn't overrepresent those folks, but we represented everybody
Yeah, the reason
in
I
the plan.
ask is because when you mention UC, Davis, you got UC Davis, you mentioned Santa Cruz, you got UC Santa Cruz, you have large student populations, you've got younger populations, and that isn't necessarily representative of the entire community because there you've got people with different abilities, different physical abilities, and so it may not be representative of who's using the services or how they use them. How does this design, how is it adapted for different ages and different abilities? How does it serve that?
Yeah, so I'll start with the bicycling side and I'll go to the pedestrian side. On the bicycling side, we have things like those protected bike lanes that people have been telling us about that provide separation. But they're more in traffic. And so we also have things like shared use paths in there as well too. I said earlier that we're maybe not going to be focusing on them as much, but they're still in the plan. On the pedestrian side, we'll be looking at those crossing improvements. We'll be incorporating things like the Americans with Disabilities Act requirements for, putting things in like curb ramps and crossings, and making sure that these new facilities are putting in are really are for everyone, especially those who are older as well too. So we even factored in, where are our senior living facilities for those
right.
folks who you want to, get to go to a park or, just get or just even walk around their community and get outside for a while.
So are you, when you're looking at that, are you looking at distances for being able to have those paths so that people can access, for instance, bus? If they're not near a bus, but there's protective walking areas to get to a bus or a protected area to be able to get a wheelchair, to safely push a wheelchair. Was that part of the plan?
Absolutely. That was a big part of the project prioritization for which areas we wanted to put in, those crossing improvements like curb ramps and sidewalk improvements. We also looked at where the parks were and the shopping areas in relation to those senior living facilities.
Right.
And also making sure that it didn't take too long to get to them too. So we really prioritized the short range walking, like a third mile to get around, to those areas and back.
Is increasing some of the buses or increasing number of bus stops, is that part of this plan?
So this plan is about the access to transit.
Okay.
We have another plan.
It's not an actual transit plan.
It's not. We have another plan for that. We have a short range and long range transit plan, which my colleague, Gamaliel Anguiano, he works on that. That's also a part of sort of the transit, climate action plan, sort of
right.
how everything fits. And there is a plan, and Chris can chime in here, about increasing, how often a bus comes, to pick you up. Because we know that, if it takes every hour for a bus to get there, that it's going to be less likely for people to use it. But if it could come more frequently, that really, increases the chances of people using the bus more often.
Yeah, Chris, can you speak to that?
Well, certainly in our climate action plan, again, for trips that occur in the city over the next 15 years, the plan commits to figuring out how to get as many of those people that want to get out of their cars in a safe and affordable and accessible manner. And so there's all kinds of interesting emerging ideas that we have in our plan that, we'll continue to assess the viability or feasibility of. For example, there's this thing, mobility as a service. That's an idea where you can integrate sort of access to all the different forms of transportation on a single app, so it's easier to move around the city. Lots of cities have considered finding sort of back end ways for employers to pay for maybe their employees' transit pass or access, how Poly students have access to transit. So certainly, there's lots of innovation in this space, and Gamaliel Anguiano would be more probably better to talk about some of the specifics, but we're going to continue to evaluate those as we move forward. And absolutely, transit's a key component of how we see folks moving around the city in the near future.
When it comes to climate action, can you talk a little bit about, the city plan and kind of where we are in the plan? Are we behind in terms of what the plan for the city is? And does this help move us up so that we're starting to advance in addressing how we're affecting climate and how we're impacting some of what we need to be doing to decrease.
That's a great question. Thanks for that. So,
yeah.
If you don't mind me stealing the spotlight for a second, Adam, I'd ask folks to visit slowcity.org/climateactionplan and see the plan that was just adopted here last August. It has one of the most ambitious local government greenhouse gas emissions reduction targets in the nation. It aims for carbon neutrality by 2035. And so
right.
You think of, we generate greenhouse gas emissions from electricity consumption, from natural gas consumption, from driving around in our vehicles, from our garbage decomposing in the landfill. and some other sources as well. But so when we think about how we get to net zero on those emissions in 15 years, we sort of look at each of those sectors and think about, how can we get there in a way that, improves quality of life in our community, that addresses issues of equity and access and affordability. And so I'd encourage you to take a look at the plan, or your listeners to take a look at the plan. I'm really proud of how it actually the first volume of the plan is a storybook from the year 2035, and it tells some stories from the future about how we were able to achieve these items. But certainly transportation is something like 50% or over 50% of our community's greenhouse gas emissions, and a lot of that comes from commuting from out of the area, and for many of those folks, over time, electric vehicles will just enter the marketplace, and that will be one of several solutions for that. But for the many trips, the many vehicle miles traveled, the many greenhouse gas emissions that are generated in our community, being able to move around our community without a single occupancy vehicle, without being in the car by yourself, is going to become increasingly important to achieving our goal moving forward. As far as our progress goes, we're actually on track to meet our 2020 target, which was 15% below our 1990 levels. So we're really proud of that accomplishment, and proud of the community for doing all the work it's done over the last decade to put us in that position, to be in that position. But certainly moving forward, the task gets more challenging as the emissions reductions grow. But at the same time, many of the technologies are in place to have that happen. Many of the pathways to really getting rid of greenhouse gas emissions while improving our community are in place. And now it's just a matter of doing the work. So the Active Transportation Plan is a really critical next step in sort of articulating or describing in greater detail what that part of the overall city's plan or goal looks like.
And you mentioned, the big projects that are now starting to move forward, some of them with more people living further outside the city. It does pose more of a challenge for single vehicles to transport people in if they're not doing remote work from their homes. So this, I'm assuming what you're saying is that this is an important part of that plan of reducing emissions in meeting the goal of 2035.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And you think of a large development, coming in like a San Luis Ranch, which is going to be, adjacent to goods and services, adjacent to a park and recreation facilities, and being, already along an existing transit route. And as you see some of the improvements that they'll be making out there for transportation access, really, if you live in that neighborhood, you'll have access to most of what you need without having to get into your vehicle.
Yeah, absolutely. You're listening to Central Coast Voices, and I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. This is KCBX, your public radio station from Salinas to Ventura, and on the web at kcbx.org. Adam Fukushima, Active Transportation Manager, and Chris Reed, Sustainability Manager, join me today from the city of San Luis Obispo. Our show today has been pre-recorded. However, you can still submit your questions and comments, and we'll direct them to Adam at the city of San Luis Obispo. You can send them to voices@kcbx.org, and we'll make sure that he gets them. And question for you, Adam. Why are we, is the idea that now that people are starting to ride electric bicycles, do you envision that more people will be riding bicycles than had previously been riding them? Or has that seemed to make any kind of a shift at all?
We've heard from a lot of people that electric bikes are a big game changer for them.
Really?
Just because of, one is the hills, some of the hills that we have in San Luis Obispo.
Yeah.
And also just the distance just helps you cover that distance. And also there's these new bikes that are coming out that they're called cargo bikes as well. And you can electrify those as well. You can do a lot of things with these things now. And you could do all of your shopping with some of these new bikes. And when you put it, when you add it on to the electric assist, it's almost like having – It's almost like replacing a car, and people tell us how fun it is for them. I think in the future, what we'll be looking for is just the affordability of electric bikes to come down. It has been a game changer for a lot of folks, but it still is kind of an equity concern because not everyone can, can afford some of these electric bikes. They're much cheaper than a car, especially if you can replace one of your cars, one of your household cars with an electric bike. But we'll be looking forward to opportunities, for when those can get cheaper and more people can use them.
Well, I know that I have a Vespa, and I've been looking for a cargo, a sidecar for my Vespa, so I could do my shopping with my Vespa because it's hard to get much in the little cargo hold. But yeah, I think a lot of people do probably want to find a way to downsize. We've just gotten so wedded to our cars. Another question is, this is great plan for people who live in San Luis Obispo. It's a tourist town. How do you and how does this plan take into account all the people that, we depend on in San Luis Obispo to sustain the economy, and how does the plan address how we motivate them to use these resources, or how do we?
That's a great question, and that's one thing that we think about a lot because we know that a lot of folks, both visitors as well as people who live here don't live in the city, and so it's something we're working on with our regional partners. On the visitor side, one thing that we're looking at, perhaps in the future, is things like bike share. Like having available bikes that people can sort of rent on a very short-term basis to get around. And then, pedestrian improvements help out with anybody who wants to go to the downtown area or walk from sort of the Hotel Row on Monterey Street and getting down to the downtown area. But the the issue of the affordability is a big one, and we're hoping that with this plan, it could help with some of those transportation costs, which can make San Luis Obispo more affordable. We also know that it's a larger issue as well. I mean, all of our planning efforts are connected. I mean, from the Climate Action Plan goals to housing and affordability, increasing our housing supply, all of those are important. All important issues that all work together and all influence each other. I don't know if Chris wanted to add to that.
I would say also when you look at why people want to come visit and stay and see San Luis Obispo, I think I'll echo something Adam said earlier. It's because this is an amazing city. It's a beautiful place to spend a weekend or spend some time here. And one of the reasons it's so amazing is because we've thought forward and have conserved open and yeah, conserved open space. And you can go out and take a hike in many of our open spaces. You can park in one of our garages downtown and then never have to need your car again for the rest of the day. And so, we really see that as an amenity and as a reason for people to come visit and really experience, how incredible a community that plans ahead in that way, how incredible it is, and just how fun it is to spend time in a place like that.
If I could just add one, if I could just add one thing to that too. So this plan has a lot of recommendations for facilities for bicycling and walking, and that's all well and good and great. But one thing that is very dependent on is just really good like zoning and planning. So if it takes 10 miles to get from where you live to get to your place of work, it's very difficult, to encourage people to ride a bike, even on the best facility there is, just because it just would just take too long. And if you think of other communities that haven't, made those choices, it's very difficult to encourage more people to ride just because they built out their city in a certain way that just makes it physically, almost impossible to do. And so I think we're very lucky, but I also think we've planned well and that we do have a compact city. We've tried to make land uses, easy to access and easy to get from one to the next, within a short, distance.
Is this something that the city of San Luis Obispo has been in any kind of discussion with other cities in Slo County? One of the things that I do notice is when people do come to the county, because of the close proximity of so many places, when people do visit, they tend to want to visit San Luis Obispo and also go to the beach and also go other places. And so being able to access those other places in ways that they don't need to jump in their cars and do that. We have trouble with residents just getting from one town to the other, or residents getting from Morro Bay to San Luis Obispo. Is there a discussion on a broader scale of how the cities can work together, looking at collaborative plans to have this kind of impact or effect?
Yes, there is. I'll mention one. There's an organization called Slow Regional Rideshare. They're sort of more of a county or regional wide organization, and they work on things like, for instance, slow car free. I think you can go to slowcarfree.org, I think, and they have options for if you're coming to the county and you want to enjoy all of our amenities. They'll give you all the sort of the options there are to get here by Amtrak or get here by other modes, and there's even incentives. There's even different restaurants and others who give you an incentive if you tell them you came here by Amtrak or by the bus or some other mode. They'll even give you some discounts on some of their products. So it's there definitely is some regional effort being put into this, and I like to see more. So.
I mean, it'd be great to have a collaborative effort through EVCs and stuff like that to encourage the utilization of those things. It would take a lot of structure and organization, I think, to do that. But I think if we were, it certainly would have some benefits. Chris, I think you had mentioned making this a more affordable place to live. Can you talk a little bit about how this plan adds to the affordability of San Luis Obispo? Because that's always something that comes up. How is the Central Coast affordable or unaffordable for people? How is San Luis Obispo an affordable place to live? And how can we attract more affordability here?
Sure. Yeah, I'll take a first shot, and then Adam, if you want to add anything, that's great. But yeah, I think when you think about what are the expenses that every single household experiences, and the top two usually are housing and transportation. And the lower income a household is, the greater percentage of their overall income that transportation affects them. And so if there's a way that people can live closer to where they work or recreate or shop. And we can provide the infrastructure so that they feel safe to get to those places on their feet or on a bike or via bus. And that's a much more affordable way to move around. And so that, that by limiting the exposure to those transportation costs, you can actually have a pretty big impact on, total sort of spending money available in a household.
Adam, did you want to add anything to
Everything you said. Absolutely.
Something that has come up a lot, especially with this time of COVID, has been, and this has to do with transportation and streets and certainly the bike lanes has been the parklets that we've seen a lot of as restaurants have tried to sustain their businesses. What do you envision? Because a lot of people like that. And when you talk about attractive cities, you talk about being able to have places that people find appealing. Parklets are part of that outside the restaurants. Is that something that there's a plan of being able to do this kind of a change and still have parklets? Do you envision that that will continue after this COVID crisis is over?
Yes, I'm so glad you asked that question because the answer is yes. So we've heard during the pandemic, the city responded by helping to build over 30 parklets in the downtown area for restaurants and other retailers to use outside. It's been tremendously successful, as I'm sure most people have seen going downtown. So what the plan does is it calls for making Parklet's a permanent program, so not just like a temporary thing, but something that someone, a restaurant owner or somebody can apply for and have on a permanent basis. And not only in the downtown area, it could be in other areas as well too. And so we're really excited about that program. And I think that brings up another point too, is that one thing that this active transportation plan strives to do is, it's not just about getting you from A to B, either by walking or bicycling, but it's also about making walking enjoyable, making an enjoyable walk to get places. So it supports things like public art, things like you may have heard there's things called like tactical urbanism, where it's kind of a big term where people can sort of take ownership of their own neighborhoods and with some parameters being able to beautify it, like with some kind of paint or landscaping, and get involved in beautifying their own neighborhoods where they live, and just make it a place that they want to enjoy in the public, out in the outdoors, in the public right of way.
And when would this come December 31st, the input period for the public closes. What's the next steps?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So the public comment period ends, like you said, at the end of the year on December 31st. And then we'll take all those comments and we will we'll analyze them, and then we will present them to the city council when this plan goes for adoption on February 2nd of next year. And so that's when the council will consider adopting the plan, and then we'll start immediately working on implementing it. So we're actually starting our budget planning process for the next 2 years. The city has a 2 year budget process, and so we're starting that now, sort of concurrent with this plan. And so once this plan is adopted, we'll go immediately into selecting some projects from it to implement into the next budget.
And then, when you select the projects, is that based on appeal to citizens? Is it based on the feedback that you're getting? Is it based on priorities that the planning department is coming up with? How do you determine that?
Yes, great question. It is very community driven, and so I would say I don't have the exact page where people go for the budget input, but if you go to slowcity.org, you'll probably be able to find on the splash page some information about the budget planning process. We can give input. In January, there'll be what's called a community forum where people can give input specifically on what they would like to see in the next budget. Our city is very community driven as far as what the input is. What the community says is usually what the budget comes out with. And it's something I'm very proud of, being involved in the budget planning process for our city, because it's very transparent. People have told us that they really like the planning process. So that is happening right now.
And then once you decide to put it in the budget and you get that approved by the city council, then do you have to go for grants to get the money, or the city council actually has money that it allocates towards this?
Yeah, so it's usually sort of a gumbo of a lot of different ingredients. It will be some city funding, it'll be some grant funding, depending on what the project is, and it'll be some well, it'll be state or federal funding, and then if there is some development involved, there may be some developer funds or fees involved as well too. So all those things are sort of part of that package. But the budget is really important because it will determine what are the most important projects to fund, and which are the most important ones to start on. And so once we know what that is, then we come up with a plan of like, okay, how do we pay for that?
If somebody were to look at the plan and say, God, this is great, how long would that plan take to enact? What do you envision would be a time frame for it?
Yeah, so we do have a bit of urgency with our climate action goals, and so a big part of it is what we call the Tier One network, a sort of core, most important network that we see in and really increasing the amount of bicycling, walking trips. And so with the plan, we're committing to building that core network by 2030, just so we could be in line with our climate action goals.
So you're really looking at rolling this out within a 10-year period of time.
That's right.
That's a lot. That's a whole lot. And during that time, you'll have all of those different projects be built and then some, because we're still needing more housing in San Luis County, right? In San
That's
Luis
right.
Obispo.
That's right.
Yeah, we're still not up where we're supposed to be.
We'll be busy, but it'll be fun.
Yeah. You're
and
listening.
And go ahead.
Go ahead, Chris. No, go ahead.
I was going to say those are related items, right? You know, we can have more housing and more active transportation, and those can be directly supportive of each other.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
And then things are going to be changing anyway. So it's a fluid plan, correct? Even though you've got a goal in mind, some of it may change.
Certainly.
Yeah. Yes,
it's a living document.
Yeah, yeah. You're listening to KCBX, Central Coast Voices, here on your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. A reminder that KCBX is collecting children's gifts, food, clothing, and checks for Grassroots too this holiday season. Please come to our studios through noon on 23rd of December to drop off holiday food for breakfast and dinner, clothing, or new or gently used gifts for children of all ages, including teens. There's a barrel in front of in our front door during business hours. We're at 4100 Vachel Lane in San Luis Obispo. Ring the bell if you have a check or refrigerator items. Grassroots 2 is looking for volunteers also to help prepare and deliver holiday baskets for those in need. If you want more details, call 805-544-2333. And some of the items that they're also looking for are things like Christmas wrapping paper, decorations, Christmas stockings, and, you know, teens are always something that sometimes people don't think about. They think about the little kids, but not the older ones. So ideas for teens: perfume, cologne, bath products, gift cards, jewelry and accessories. And then on a bigger scale, if you have the means, bikes, scooters, skateboards, board games, and sports equipment. If you can help, we really appreciate you. And gentlemen, I want to make sure that I'm not sure if I asked all the right questions, so I want to make sure that I'm giving you some time to wrap up here so that we can make sure that you're getting the information out that you need. We've got about 7 minutes, and I want to make sure, Adam and Chris, that you know, we're addressing all the things that you want people to know about this plan and how to get involved. So, Chris, I'll go to you first.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Just, you know, from our perspective, we're really excited to have an active transportation plan that can advance our greenhouse gas emissions goals, but also, you know, improve the quality of life and affordability and accessibility in our community. So I'll let Adam speak to specific ways to interact and improve that plan. But just we look forward to hearing from everyone and having this this plan to work from.
Okay, great. Adam?
Yes, thank you for having me on today. I would say, you know, I'm really excited about our active transportation plan as well. And I'll just mention one more time, you can go to slowbikewalk.org to get the draft and read it and submit comments by the 31st of this month. I'm really looking forward to adopting the plan. It's been such a community-driven process. One reason why it's taken almost 3 years to adopt is that we really wanted to make sure that everyone had their say in the plan. And so it's nice to see all this public outreach and input, you know, come to a head with the plan. And so I'm looking forward to getting into the implementation of it and starting to build some of these great projects and seeing, you know, more people writing who are not currently writing, and seeing more people walking who aren't walking as much, and coming up with ways of making, you know, the walk more fun and enjoyable, and just enjoying the city that we have here in San Luis Obispo. We're really all very lucky to live here.
With all the work that you've put into this, Adam, if people were to call in now or go to the website, can they still give input, and will it still be considered?
Yes, up until the 31st, we'll accept all input.
That's great. That's fantastic. I want to thank my guests today for joining me, Adam Fukushima, Active Transportation Manager, Chris Reed, Sustainability Manager for the City of San Luis Obispo. Our show today has been pre-recorded. However, if you do still have questions or comments and you'd like to share them with the City of San Luis Obispo about this project, you're invited to submit them directly to voices@kcbx.org, and we will forward them directly to Adam at the City of San Luis Obispo. Please do so before December 31st so your voices can be heard. Central Coast Voices will not be airing next week due to the Christmas holiday and special scheduling. We wish you a safe and modified celebration this year with gratitude for your listenership, and hope that by this time next year we can celebrate a little differently and in person with more of those who we love. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX, and made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Happy holidays, and thank you for joining us today.